So today we have Sian May, head of school. She's talking to renowned positive education expert, David Bott. Let's get into this episode right now.
Welcome to the Alice Smith Pod on Purpose podcast. Join us as we delve into insightful discussions and gain valuable perspectives from the prominent figures in the field of education.
David, thank you for being on this podcast episode here today. How are you doing today?
Yeah, thanks, Simon. I'm excited to be here. It's a really hot, warm day down here in Melbourne, Australia, in the middle of summer. So nice to be on the call with you. Appreciate the invitation from Sian and looking forward to the conversation.
So what time of day is it there with you, David?
It's nearly 5 p.m. When I say nearly 5 p.m., it's nearly kind of the witching hour in my house where the 8-year-old and the 6-year-old kind of start to go a bit crazy at the end of the day. So at the moment, it's all quiet and we're going well. But if you hear some screams in the background, that's hungry children.
Okay, well, good luck with that. Sian, great to have you here as well. How are you doing today?
Very good, very good. Keen to speak to David and excited to get started.
Well, I'm really keen to hear this conversation as well. I was really also keen to know though, Sian, why was it that you were particularly excited to have David on this recording here today? What is it that you're hoping he's going to bring to this episode?
I think he brings a real clarity of something that can be quite complicated and actually makes it really applicable in each other's lives, particularly in education, but it can apply to anybody just as easily. And I think it's quite good to avoid the jargon and go to something that's really relevant. And you could start tomorrow with some of the things we might talk about.
And then this whole subject, I mean, why is this an important subject and something that's close to your heart?
I mean, well-being underpins everything we do. Without we are well, we can't help the children be well. And without they're well, they can't thrive. So education without well-being is kind of pointless. And I think it's obviously the first position we all start from as educators is everyone in the community needs to be well.
Now, I'm going to ask you both in a moment about your collaboration together. But David, tell me a little bit about your own background. I mean, how did you end up where you are today?
My story really starts when I was, I think, 15 or 16 years old, and it was a cold winter in Melbourne. About 6 o'clock in the morning, I'd woken up early one day to see my mum, who was a career educator, marking piles of English essays at 6 o'clock in the morning, and she'd been up for hours previously. And it was at that moment I decided I never want to have anything to do with education, never want to be a teacher, never want to get involved at all. But I think probably education's in the blood. My mum went on to found her own school and was, you know, passionate educator, PhD in education. But I started my undergraduate degree in psychology. I was fascinated by psychology really initially, but I ended up in Japan on a gap year, having completed my psychology degree, and accidentally got a job teaching English in Tokyo, and pretty much instantly fell in love with the experience of being with students and enabling them to learn and grow. And so I came back to Australia, completed my teaching degree, and started a 15-year career in teaching, mostly teaching A-level psychology and IB psychology. Really, my passion in schools was not so much teaching and learning academic subjects, but really about the relationships and the connection with students and with colleagues, but particularly with students. And so I eventually, again, tried to leave education and did my postgraduate studies in psychology. And just as I was about to kind of leave the profession of teaching, I got a job at Geelong Grammar School, which is and was one of the world's leading well-being education schools, and kind of got stuck in this intersection of education and psychology, which has become known as well-being education. So I've been in that field now for 10 years, helping schools place well-being science at the heart of education.
And what is it exactly about well-being science that you're so passionate about? I mean, what's your big why in the morning? Why is it you get up in the morning fired up for the work that you do?
Oh, I think it's hard to elaborate too much further on what Sian said, that ultimately, the reason schools exist, the reason schools like Alice Smith exist, is to help craft and guide and nurture the next generation of young humans into the world. And so this work of well-being science is helping take a really kind of precise scientific lens over how we can best support and nurture the well-being of community, and also inform the pedagogy of educators in classrooms as well. So I think pretty much every educator in the world chooses this profession because they love kids. They want to make a difference to the world. And the science of well-being is helping us inform how we can do that in a really kind of strategic, deliberate, intentional way.
Sian, tell me a little bit about the work that you've already been doing with David up until now.
The work that David's done for us at Alice Smith was actually with our leadership team when we were looking at all of our systems. And actually, it was very much contextual, like what do our students need and what should the future look like, and kind of bridging those gaps. And there's a lot more work to be done in the future. I think this is the beauty of this work, is it's never quite done. You're always incrementally improving. And certainly projects I've worked with David on in the past, it can be for a very specific need that you might contact David. So there might be a pattern that you're seeing in your staff or a pattern you're seeing in your students, and you need a sounding board. You know, what is it in the system that might be generating that? And to David's point about curriculum and well-being, some of the conversations he and I have had is that I think they're a reflection of the same thing. If you care about the well-being of your students, you want the curriculum to enable flourishing. Curriculum is not separate from well-being, and well-being is not your head of year caring for you and having a strong relationship. It's everything in the environment signaling that we care for you, we care about your experiences, and we want you to be you. So I think what's happened through the projects is we've elicited a lot of thinking together, and that's also enhanced a lot of what our community have heard from David, and it's valuable work.
I'm trying to remember who it was who famously said that culture eats strategy for breakfast, which I thought was a great phrase. But David, I'd love to understand a bit about how you drive culture change in schools like Alice Smith. How do you go about doing that?
I love that quote. I think we also think about it in the opposite way as well, that culture isn't, in our opinion, in the way we think about culture is not some nebulous, weird kind of thing that exists, but actually it's quite simply people like us do things like this. How are you turning up? How are you behaving? How are you acting every day? And every person in a school community, everyone from the head of school through to the teachers, through to the administration, support staff, the students, parents, all of these people are contributing to literally crafting culture in real time by the way they behave. And the interesting thing about wellbeing strategy is it can help us shift those behaviors in a really proactive, hopeful, strategic way. Because I think one of the challenges around wellbeing education or wellbeing in schools is that sometimes it lacks direction. You know, there is no teacher, no educator in the world who would disagree with Sian and say wellbeing doesn't matter. Like, we all believe it matters, and every school in the world does wellbeing, always have. Like, that's kind of so ingrained in what schools do. But the strategic kind of approach to wellbeing is why the field has evolved in the way it has, where it's got to this point. So of course, there's kind of this bi-directional interplay between culture and strategy, but we absolutely believe that culture matters, but we want to make sure we're taking a really strategic approach to evolving, crafting, nurturing that culture.
Sian, it's great to hear David talking about all of this from a kind of theoretical point of view. I'd love to know how that culture shift looks actually within Alice Smith. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I don't know if we would use the word shift or pivot. I think it's part of who the school is. I think there's a really firm foundation of positive psychology and well-being in the school already. I think it's how do you harness that foundation and go to the next level? And I think that's where the strategic view really helps us to do that. And what do you want to target as some of the gaps or the learning, or how's that journey look like to everybody? So for us, I think we're well placed to kind of go to the next level. I think for us to be more strategic and intentional around what kind of training do we embark on as adults together with our parents. So some of our parents have taken part in purpose-driven workshops this year, for example, and actually that's illuminated them. So they know what it means if their child's embarking on that. So it's kind of a shared journey. So for us, there's some stuff that we do quite systematically. But also, to David's point, we're trying to create feedback loops. We're trying to be honest and upfront when something maybe doesn't go quite right. We're trying to create, I suppose, a safe psychological space for the whole community to evolve together. I'm also cognizant that COVID has kind of slowly faded into the rearview mirror, but actually we don't really know what the net effect will be. And I'm sure there are many in our community and others that don't feel we've really addressed that properly. We've just kind of kept going, and we're doing well-being as if it hadn't happened. So always quite cognizant of that.
David, Sian said, talking about the need to be honest and upfront. I mean, how do you find it is when you're working with other organizations, the need for them to be honest with themselves? Because I imagine that anything like this requires anybody to be honest about where you've come from to understand where you want to get to.
Yeah, for sure. Every school is unique, and every school has a very unique context and culture and history and human makeup. And so to do this work well, Sian's right, like to do this work well, we must recognize the strengths that a school like Alice Smith has. This is a world-class school that is not broken. And when you have people like Sean and her leadership team who have this ambitious vision to continue to grow and evolve, I think that enables people to be honest and courageous, and there's possibility for it to be even better. And with that kind of framing, I think people are pretty willing to be courageous, hopeful, ambitious in where they want the place to go. But it's got to be grounded in the historical, the real context. And so that's where our strategic work with schools actually starts, with that question of, tell me about the historical context that got us to where we are. Like, we need to understand the school, where its history, what's made it tick, what its values are, what its beauty is already, and then we can look to incrementally grow the school, make it even better.
I think it's a really interesting point that you're bringing up there, because when you're working with schools like this, it's great to have that foresight, that enthusiasm on Sean's part, of course, to take the school forward in that way. David, tell me something about the Institute of Positive Education.
Yeah, the Institute of Positive Education was my home, my professional home for about 10 years. It's based at Geelong Grammar School in Melbourne, Australia. And the Institute of Positive Education was set up to be a research and training institute inside of a normal kind of school environment where practitioners and researchers could come together and really start to document, articulate, capture best practice in this field of wellbeing education. So the institute was set up in 2014. I helped lead that for a number of years, and we ended up working with over 1,000 school educators from over 1,000 schools globally and government organizations. And I think the real benefit of that institution is that it was driven by practitioners who are on the ground, you know, and we have huge respect, and I have huge respect for our academic colleagues who work in research institutions and are helping us learn the science and understand the science. But ultimately, teaching education is a craft. It's not a science. And so there has to be a balance between practitioner input into where the field is going and academic scientific input. And it's really at that intersection where we get the real exciting possibilities for schools like Alice Smith to grow.
You say it's a craft. I mean, how do you see us as a global society having crafted that over the last, oh gosh, I don't know, say 50 years? I mean, you know, over the last 50 years, how have you seen all of that changed?
We absolutely believe that education is a craft from the perspective of it's qualitatively different from a science in that, you know, science, the scientific method is built around isolating variables and manipulating individual variables and holding everything else stable in order to see what happens when we manipulate one variable is kind of the scientific method. And once we can do that, then we can replicate that in other environments. Teaching is literally kind of the opposite. Philosophically, the opposite of that. Teaching is about embracing variables. Like, literally every single child is different. Every single lesson is different. Every single moment is different. And that's where the science can inform the craft, but teaching is fundamentally a craft that's never, it's never masterable, which is not a word, but we never master education as well, because we're constantly evolving and growing. In terms of the craft of well-being, what we've been able to do, and I think Sean used this word earlier, is to create more intentionality around the way we're harnessing wellbeing science to inform the craft of teaching. So the way that teachers greet students as they enter the classroom, the way they're assessing work, the type of questions they're asking of students, the way feedback's given, the way students' emotions are regulated and adapted inside of a classroom, you know, the whole classroom experience and the pedagogy of a teacher, all of it, every single moment in a classroom can be informed by wellbeing science. And that's where the excitement is, that we can learn from the science and then adapt it to help inform the craft of education inside of the classroom.
And Sean, you know, again, great to hear David talking about some of this theory. Again, how does it look though in Alice Smith? You know, the example that David used about a simple thing like the way that teachers greet students. What other examples can you identify that you can share with us about things that you see around school?
Yeah, there's two really overt examples, and one is translanguaging. So actually what we've done is we've used language as a route to the identity of each individual child, and we're seeing that as a strength. So if you arrive and you are a Mandarin speaker, what we're going to do is use that root language that you've mastered to show as a way into English. And in doing that, we're kind of building the child's sense of self-esteem, efficacy, profile with their peers. And we're showing each child that being diverse is actually a strength for our community. So simple things such as everyone knowing hello in your home language is really crucial for a child as they develop. We also draw on positive psychology character strengths, and many of our parents will be really familiar with that work. All of those character strengths are in a variety of languages, and children are really encouraged to actively express themselves in a language that feels not only good to them, but enables them to be authentic and honest with themselves and each other and test it in a kind of safe environment. So we believe that sometimes well-being can look a bit fuzzy if you're not careful. And David, you and I have spoken about this a lot down the time we've known each other. Whereas actually what we've tried to do is tether it to something that's very meaningful for a child to talk about with their family and give the family a guide as to what that could look like when they're talking at dinner or they're driving to school, and how to make really maximal use of those moments.
David, I'm loving what Sian's talking about here. I mean, clearly you're nodding at the same time as she's talking. Do you see it all going well compared to how you see it going in other schools? You know, what you're seeing in Alice Smith right now, do you see that all heading in the right direction? I'm really going to hope that you say yes at this point.
I think the reality, just to be really honest, the answer is the way we see well-being education is that it's an infinite game, as Simon Sinek might call it. There is no end point. You don't win this game. What you do is you invest in possibility and growth, and that's what we're seeing at Alice Smith. It's not a perfect school. No school is perfect. There are challenges everywhere. Especially when you get 1,000 humans together inside a building. Of course, there are going to be challenges that you face, but the way Sian and the leadership team, the school, both have a strategic approach at a really high level, at a really kind of systematic level, but also making it really granular and real and tactical is the key to success. And, you know, as I said, we've worked with over 1,000 schools, and that the most successful schools are where they have a very clearly articulated vision and strategy. And at the other end, people are empowered at a really granular, practical, tactical, linguistic level. And if I'd say one last thing about that is that Sian mentioned the language. You know, we often see that a real marker of success of wellbeing education is a shift in language or an evolution in the language the school has in terms of knowing how to talk about wellbeing and ill-being, but particularly around wellbeing. And the language of character strengths was an example Sian gave. You know, most school, you know, there are about 4 or 5 million schools in the world. Most of them don't have the language of character strengths, which Alice Smith does. And that enables students to talk in really profound ways about positive human qualities that exist in all of us. So the language is an example of a really key metric that we look at in terms of success. And I think Alice Smith is undoubtedly doing fantastic work in that way.
And then how does the future of all of this look in schools? What is the future of wellbeing in education?
I'll have a crack at that first, Sian. I don't know if Sian's got the answer. It's a great question. I think what we're seeing in Australia, where we're based here, but also in Canada, we're doing a lot of work there throughout Southeast Asia and in the UK a little bit, is a recognition at a government level, at a systemic level, that schools should have a very clearly articulated approach and a well-articulated design for wellbeing strategy and wellbeing implementation. There's funding coming in from governments in Australia and internationally as well. So I think there's been, you know, arguably one of the silver linings of COVID was a greater spotlight being focused on the impact of wellbeing, the role that educators play in supporting, nurturing the wellbeing of students, the role of wellbeing inside of school communities. And I think, you know, if we can call it a silver lining, I think there's some of the funding that has resulted from that recognition is shifting the priorities. So schools have more budget, more funding, more awareness. Governments are mandating that schools are taking a more strategic approach. So things are tracking in a really good way. And I think arguably COVID played a helpful role in that little piece. So I think the other thing I would add is that we're getting better and better about how to do wellbeing strategically in schools. You know, the science of wellbeing is kind of brand new. It's only been around for 15 or 20 years, and we're rapidly learning what causes human flourishing, the contributing factors, the variables. We're learning how teachers can bring this into life in their classrooms. And so we're getting better at tactically bringing this into real life in real classrooms with real students. And so I'm very optimistic about where we're going, where the direction is going from both a strategic level and from a granular kind of pedagogical curricular kind of level as well.
Sian, equal optimism from you, would you say?
I have optimism tempered by being pragmatic as well, and what it looks like, to David's point about continuous improvement, when I look at the context of the world right now, it's very complex. So young people are having to navigate the dissonance of the geopolitical backdrop, the Industrial Revolution, AI. This is a completely unique set of circumstances that we haven't seen before. So to David's point, the more you leverage the evidence and the more you learn with each other and you collaborate with other schools, you can only multiply what we know to help students. So it's just a continuous collective effort. But I do feel optimistic, but also keen to share that we don't always know the answer for a new thing that might arise.
Again, it goes back to that being honest and upfront about things. I'm keeping an eye on time. We're going to need to bring this episode to a close shortly. But David, I'd love to know something about your book. I understand, what is it, 10 things schools get wrong and how we can get them right?
That's right. I won't ask you which was your favourite chapter, Simon, but that's a book we've enjoyed writing. And the very first sentence in that book that was co-authored with Dr. Jared Cooney Horvath, who is the leading learning scientist, neuroscientist in the field of learning. But the very first sentence in that book is, education is not broken. And it's a kind of intentionally a counterpoint to kind of pervasive narrative that we have in the media that, you know, the system's broken. And we push back a bit and say, actually, no, the system is not broken. If you look at any kind of metrics or the ways we're measuring success in education, like, the system is not broken. Of course there are challenges, and of course there are stumbling blocks. And some of the challenges that schools are facing is that they do things sometimes that feel intuitive, but are not necessarily evidence-based. And so we articulated 10 things, 10 typical strategies or ideas that schools tend to implement that are actually not really supported by empirical science or evidence around the efficacy of that approach. And so we helped kind of push back and challenge schools to think a little bit differently about things like assessment, grading, use of technology, the type of work students are being asked to do, and so a whole range of different concepts within schools that we're gently challenging educators with.
And anyone listening to this right now, where could they find that? And where could they find you online as well, David?
Yeah, the book is available wherever good books are sold. Is that what I'm supposed to say? No, on Amazon. Amazon probably the best place to find the book. It's really designed for busy educators who just want to kind of be challenged and provoked. And so it's really a quite readable, fun book, we think. And if you wanted to get in touch with me, we love having conversations with educators and school leaders. Probably LinkedIn is the best place to find me, David Bott, on LinkedIn, but also our website at thewellbeingdistillery.com.
Well, we'll put links to all of those in the show notes for this particular episode. Sean, we know how to get hold of you, of course, at Alice Smith School. It's been great talking to you both. But David, how's witching hour looking in your home here today?
No noise so far, Simon. So I think that's good news. No noise is good news or something. Is that right? So we'll get out there and feed the kids some veggies and pasta or something.
Okay, that's really good. Sean, thank you for being here. It's been great talking to you. And I appreciate you giving up your time. I know how busy you are.
Not at all. Just really great to connect with you both. And thanks, David, as ever, for wonderful insights.
Thank you. Appreciate you, Sean. Thanks for the work you're doing at Alice Smith. And thank you, Simon, for the conversation.
So there we are. That brings us to the end of this episode. If you have any questions at all, then please do get in touch with the school. But in the meantime, thank you for listening to this, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now.